Hey, this is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 135 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. And this one I'm really excited about is an interview with the guys from Reveille Barbecue in Houston, Texas, more specifically in Magnolia. This one's an interesting interview, and I'll try to be as quick as possible because it's an hour long. A lot of my interviews are long, but this one's an hour, almost a little bit longer than an hour. But it's an interview first with the three of them, and the three of them being James McFarland, Michael Migna, and Wade Elkins. Then it cuts down, James has to leave, so then the two of them. But prior to the three of them getting together, I interviewed each one of them individually. So we have the background of all three of the guys, how they came together, how the restaurant was started, their vision for the restaurant, the food, the fact that they have every day a $20 beef rib, flat rate, $20 beef rib, how they've done alligator and how they're going to be doing alligator, whole hog. The connection to Feijus and Tejas and the Pit Room, among other restaurants. It's a really, really cool interview. I know you're going to dig it. Thanks so much, guys, for taking the time. And per usual, I am excited to have The Smoke Sheet on board as a sponsor for this podcast. The Smoke Sheet is available at bbqnewsletter.com. It's a barbecue newsletter that arrives in your inbox every Wednesday, chock full of news and information. It was started by Ryan Cooper and Sean Ludwig, who are at BBQ Tourist and at NYC BBQ, respectively. It was started and it continues to be run by these guys. They have original content, news, restaurant openings, restaurant closures, pitmasters, things on pitmasters if they're moving or going to different places, or new items or specials, or just barbecue news in general, as well as links to the latest events that are coming up, really cool events that are always awesome barbecue events, as well as a barbecue recipe of the week, links to barbecue podcasts and YouTube stuff. So, like, as you can tell, there's tons and tons of stuff. I've been on board with The Smoke Sheet since day one. You can check out The Smoke Sheet at bbqnewsletter.com. That's bbqnewsletter.com. The Smoke Sheet is barbecue news worth consuming. And if you are digging these, please subscribe. And I noticed I do say digging these. I didn't notice. Someone wrote me and told me that I say digging. I thought that was something everyone said. Obviously, it's not. So I apologize if it's a weird California thing. But if you're liking these, please subscribe to the podcast, the YouTube channel. If you're just listening to this as a podcast, check it out at YouTube. It's youtube.com/kevinsbbqjoints. I have a website at kevinsbbqjoints.com with links to everything I do, all the podcasts, all the YouTube stuff, all the barbecue joint visits, lots of cool content. But again, thanks so much for listening. I so appreciate it, and I appreciate all the feedback. Shoot it my way. Thanks so much. Enjoy this. You're open 4 days a week or 3 days?
4 days a week, Thursday through Sunday. We open at 11. We are typically there till 3 o'clock every day, but that's when we start running out of some stuff. And we're usually sold out by five.
So it's a lunch. It's lunch for right now, but you guys, it's in the back of your minds, is there a dinner option coming up?
I think we're going to reserve the dinners more for private events and ticketed events.
That makes sense.
We plan on doing those like once a month in the near future. But for now, it's just going to be. I mean, also we have a 500 gallon reverse flow pit, and you know we're maxed out on that pit right now. It's not like we can cook more food if we wanted to. So. We're cooking as much as we can, and we're selling out by 5 o'clock.
And who made your pit?
Evie Mays. Going back to the schedule, he's talking about Thursday through Sunday. He's saying we sell out at 5 o'clock. Usually on Thursday and Friday we sell out around five. Saturday and Sunday are more busier days. So like he was talking about, we max out our 500 gallon pit, which is made by Evie Mays. So Saturday and Sunday usually we're sold out right between 3 and 4 o'clock.
Okay.
Thursday, Friday, a lot of people are just now starting to find out about it. Thursday, Fridays, we've only been open for 1 month now.
So that makes sense. So then until you guys get more pit capacity, that's, and then especially now with, how was it when you guys found out about the top 20, the new top 25?
We tripled our sales in the first 2 days of service. We tripled our sales in every hour. Yeah, it was nuts.
Isn't that crazy? That's just, and it's, you would think, are there people, do you think there are people, you would think those people would have already known about you guys, but maybe there's people that get the magazine that didn't know, right?
I think there's definitely a barometer. Texas Monthly and Daniel Vaughn being the first full-time barbecue editor in the nation, there's a barometer, there's a gauge for Texas barbecue, and he sets it.
Mm-hmm.
So what he makes the pendulum swing.
True.
It goes. And it's, you know, it was nothing. It's nothing that we could have asked for. It's nothing that we could have asked for at all. Our Thursdays now are looking like our best Saturdays 6 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Crazy.
So it's been really, really good.
That's exciting. That's really exciting. So then coming into summer, you guys, it's going to be nuts.
I think you're right in the sense that people have noticed us in their backyard, but then they saw us in Texas Monthly, and they're like, oh, yeah, that's in Magnolia. We live in Magnolia. And we have people coming up saying, hey, I saw you in Texas Monthly. We saw the top 25, and we see you all the time. We just saw the article, and it's been some people that have been passing by that are now stopping in because they noticed us in the article as well.
And like James said, it's like a stamp of approval having Daniel Vaughn say that this is a place you should try to check out. It's kind of funny how that someone might have heard about you 20 times, but now because he said it, that is pretty crazy. So then what's the future plans then for the restaurant itself? Like, what is the restaurant like? Is there indoor outdoor seating?
Currently, everything right now is outdoor seating.
Yeah.
Our ultimate goal is to become a brick and mortar and have a mixture of probably about half and half, half indoor seating, half outdoor seating, have a full kitchen. That way we can expand our menu, do just crazy things. Like one thing we were talking about today was making up some sushi roll with a brisket and do a roll with a pork belly and pulled pork in the middle of it. With the full kitchen, we could just throw random stuff like that out there.
And it seems like the three of you guys are creative people, and that you guys have worked places and done things that people are outside, are doing things outside the box. So it makes sense that you guys would want to do that. And you might as well. If you have the opportunity, if people are interested too.
And we currently are, even with our small establishments we are right now, we're currently just a food trailer on the side of the road. But with the build out area, with the 2,000 square foot patio, to me, I think we are doing stuff that's outside of the box, like doing alligator. The last two events we've done is we've had alligator. This past one, we did two 39 pound alligators, pulled off and sold that at market value. The one before that, we did another whole alligator and
How do you do alligator? Do you pull it? Is that how you do it?
Yes, sir. It's a little bit different than like a whole hog or anything like that. Since it's a cold-blooded animal, the fat on it is almost like a jello texture. So first thing you want to do is trim off actually all the fat off the meat.
Okay.
And then smoke it, render it down, and then once it's completely finished, you just pull all the meat off the bones.
Oh, that's interesting. I've had it, but I've never seen it prepared. So I've always wondered if it, and then when you, I think you said pull, and I'm like, oh, I guess that makes sense. You'd be pulling alligator.
Come to Texas and try it specifically, right?
I need to, definitely. I don't have to go all the way to Louisiana. I could just go straight to you guys. So is that going to be something that'll be on the menu like once a month or something? Or?
Once a month, definitely. I think Mike pretty much, Mike and Wade handle that. They're the whole animal masters, but I think their goal is, you want to do it once a month, huh?
Yeah, we were talking about that's what our ultimate goal is, do an event once a month. Do something different than our normal menu out there.
Have you done whole hog? I'm sure working at Fegis, you might, yeah.
Yeah, we've done five,
I think.
We've done five.
So that's exciting, too. Do you have a pit built by your trailer?
Yeah, we actually have a pit that, the pit we have was actually made by Patrick Fegis, and it's a very simple and rustic pit. There's nothing really to it. It's made out of 2x4s and sheet metal. And when he actually had a new pit built for Fegis Barbecue, he had one welded out of steel. The deal was that if you get a new pit, you have to get rid of the old one. So he came and dropped it off at Reveille Barbecue. And that's actually how we started doing whole hog was a farmer approached me that had an excess of red wattle pigs on his farm. He asked if I could, if I would buy one and cook it. So I reached out to Reveille. This was before the offer had been made to me. I reached out to Reveille because I knew that Patrick had dropped off his old hog pit over there. And I said, hey, you guys have a hog pit. I have a farmer with a hog. Do you want to do an event? And so, the rest is basically history on that.
Wow.
And we've done it every month since November of 2018.
In conjunction with Reveille, or were you... I guess you've been there for what, how, like 2 months now?
So since March, yeah. So a little over a month, yeah.
No, going on 2 months.
Going on 2 months,
yeah.
Yeah,
I think 2 days will be 2 months.
Yeah.
With the events, you'll be doing the whole hog or alligator or something funky. Not that whole hog is necessarily funky, because it's something that it's typical in a lot of places.
Well, to Texas, it's a little bit funky. There's not a lot of people doing it in Texas. So I wouldn't say it's a hard sell, but it's definitely it's definitely a novelty item, and not something that we're trying to implement as a regular menu item or something that we're really even, you know, trying to make a bunch of money off of. It's more of a novelty. It gets people out. They get to see something that isn't really done in Texas a lot. And it's a challenge for us. And it's a lot more challenging than cooking a brisket or cooking a rack of ribs or something like that.
Yeah, no, I've read some books recently, and I was reading about Scott's and just like how long, like it could be, what, 14 to 16 to 18 hours sometimes to cook. So that's just, that's insane. That's really, and that's cool that you guys are willing to do different things too, because I think that's a standout. So what are you guys serving, like meats and sides and stuff?
We have all of our normal proteins. We typically will have 2 to 3 different sausages on the menu at all times. We have our staple taco sausage, and then we'll have...
Yeah, can you talk about that real quick? Because I read about the taco sausage.
Yeah, so Mike actually came up with that. It's an all beef link done with 2 different cheeses, I believe pepper jack and cheddar, and cilantro lime. It's a gnarly link, and we recommend that everyone buy 2 of them. We have brisket, pulled pork, chicken, we have turkey, we have pork belly, we have, pork ribs, beef ribs. We do all of that. We do the Texas Trinity plus everything else. And the Texas Trinity obviously is beef ribs and sausage, brisket ribs and sausage. But we're doing chicken, turkey, pork belly, pork ribs, beef ribs, and pork shoulder.
Every day?
Yes.
And let me exaggerate on that real quick. A couple of things. I think our turkey is fantastic. One of the things a lot of people don't think about when they go to barbecue restaurants is turkey.
For sure, which they should, but yeah.
And another thing is our beef ribs. Our beef ribs, every single day, we got beef ribs, and it's first come, first serve, but they're only $20 for one whole beef rib, and they're the big dinosaur.
Oh, that's so great.
We have the best deal in the state, literally in our state.
In the country, possibly in the country, I think.
Yeah, because we're only charging $20 a rib, and again, it's not something that we're going to make a lot of money on. But it's something that makes reveille, and that is that we are not like anybody else, and we don't want to ever be confined by, we have to do this because we have this reputation. The thing about us when we first opened is we wanted to have something new every weekend, and we did that for the most part. When we first opened, we were doing, really cool stuff, unique stuff that brought people out, and that's what we're going to continue to do. Our kitchen's going to always put out our normal menu. But you can be guaranteed that anytime you come to Reveille, we're going to have something experimental too.
That's awesome.
We're going to barbecue to have fun, not to make money.
Yeah, exactly. If we would have gotten into it for money, we would maybe have already had a lot of money, or B, we would have been fools. And we don't have a lot of money and we're not fools.
But you'd like to be doing this. You would like to do this for 6, 10 15 years. You want to be able to do it.
I mean, if we can make a little bit of money on barbecue, that's great, man. Yeah.
So both you guys still have, do you both have your normal jobs too? Or so you're still a firefighter and you're still, are you in the gas and oil business still?
I am. Yes. Okay.
So then how does that work for both you guys with your employers?
That's one reason we brought on Wade. With our schedules, him having a Monday through Friday, and then with my schedule rotates every single week.
True.
Like this week, I work Monday, Wednesday, Sunday. There is no way we could open up through the week. I have more days like Thursday, Friday through there. Does it conflict with our business, our regular work schedule? It does somewhat, especially like James. James is only able to get out there Monday through Friday after he gets off work.
Makes sense.
So Monday through Friday, he can only get out there about 5:30, 6 o'clock. And then he's also got a family he's got to take care of. So he can only come out there a couple hours, maybe make a sausage that day, take care of some other stuff, then go back home, take care of his family. And then my days were, I work 24-hour shifts. I work 24-hour straight this week. Like I said, I work Monday, get off Tuesday, go back to work Wednesday. I'll get off Thursday morning at 6:30, go home. If I'm lucky, I might take an hour or two nap and go back out to Reveille. So by the end of the day, I'm just...
What you've done is you've answered the question if people were wondering, why do you guys bring Wade on? Well, that's why you brought Wade on, because it makes sense. You want to continue doing what you're doing, but also have your normal life, because that's...
Yeah.
You want to make it work. You're being smart about it.
That's half of the reason. I mean, to be able to bring on somebody who's a great cook as Wade is, he's a very good cook at Pitmaster, cooking barbecue, stuff like that, but he's also a very good in the kitchen, making different sides.
I mean, yeah, Wade has the culinary expertise. He has the background as a chef in the kitchen. His wife is a chef, and they can bring a lot more to the table than just hiring a guy that can just run the pits. Because really, ultimately, what are we doing at the end of the day? We're burning sticks, right?
Mm-hmm.
We got to maintain the temperature of our meats. We don't want anything overcooked or under. Yeah. But in the end, we were looking for the whole package. And after our experience with hanging out with him, we decided that he brought that. And I think we made the right choice, definitely. On board.
Because of his culinary expertise, we were able to add and improve some of our sides, like the white smoked white cheddar grits, the potato salad. We changed the potato salad up from a regular potato salad more into a German style potato salad.
It's got bacon.
Well, there you go. That's awesome. How many sides do you guys usually have?
Four. We do usually the texolote, the borracho beans, the potato salad, and the smoked white cheddar grits.
And then also you have dessert too. Like, isn't there a s'mores dessert or something? Or?
Desserts always change up every week. Okay. Like we were talking about Wade and his wife being a chef. This week, she actually made a side specifically for us, the s'mores brownie.
Okay, that's what it was. Okay.
Which was fantastic. The day before that, she made a strawberry banana pudding cake.
See, that's also exciting for you guys, too, because you get to try something new.
we don't mind it, man. It's
Yeah, you're like kids in the candy store kind of thing.
Definitely.
Who designed your shirts, too? The one that looks like the Astros.
Mike initially brought up the idea of doing something Astros. Mike's a huge Astros fan. We're all a huge Astros fan, but I think out of the whole Revely family, he's by far the biggest Astros fan. But he was like, let's do something with Astros. And I was like, all right, leave it to me. And I looked until I found the design that I wanted, and then I approached our graphic designer who runs our shirts and hats, and they made it happen. But I have to say that we have the best anniversary shirt. That's our anniversary shirt. We have the best barbecue anniversary shirt that you can get in the nation. And B, overall, because of our experience, and I'm not bragging or anything, I kind of am, but no, really, we have the best swag. Like, when it comes to hats, shirts, apparel, we're there. Yeah, we have a gnarly lineup.
And that's important, too, I think, because everyone's wearing stuff. Yeah, like you're wearing a blue cord shirt. Like, people love
barbecue. Oh, yeah, man, representing Steven Rossler.
Awesome guy. No, his family. That's what's so cool too. But I love your shirts are off. Good evening. How you doing?
Good. How about you?
I'm doing well, James. So first off, can you pronounce the name of your restaurant so people can? Because I've heard it like seven different ways.
Sure. It's a French restaurant. It's Revile. We're just kidding. It's Revely Barbecue Company.
Exactly. And it's named after the bugle
sound. Yes, it is. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of got a dual purpose. We are located on the future Aggie Highway that'll be opening up later on this year.
Okay.
So that will take us from Magnolia, Greater Tomball Magnolia area, straight up to College Station. And Revely is the mascot for A&M. So yes. That was another purpose in that too. Military, Mike, one of the co-owners is a former Marine. Once a Marine, always a Marine, he'll say. So that's where we landed with that.
And also too, like, could it be like to wake up the barbecue? I was thinking like in my head it was something like
that. Absolutely, yeah. That's primarily when Mike and I were talking about a name. He was like, well, hell, we got to get up really early for barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Revely works too. And it kind of went from there.
And it could also like wake up your senses, wake up like it's like a different, like the different things that you do with barbecue could wake people's, you know, perception of barbecue. I'm a little too cerebral about it. But it's...
For sure. Yeah, yeah.
Well, let's go back. What's your background?
My background, professionally, I was in oil and gas for a long time. I still am currently, but I started cooking at home. And from there, I actually, I lost my job in oil and gas, got into cattle. And that whole time I was doing that, Mike and I were kind of cooking for a few local pubs around town that we used to imbibe at a little bit more frequently than we do now. And we did cook-offs. Local
cook-offs?
Yeah, just local cook-offs, mainly for charitable causes. And you know, we won. We had some fun. We did some minor stuff. And I was always having people over on the weekend. He would come over and we'd do briskets and pork shoulders. and, you know, just practicing with different proteins. And eventually I was on Instagram and my wife was like, well, you know, you're doing it so often. Why don't you go learn how to do it like professionally? So I found an ad that was sponsored on Instagram for the Pit Room.
Yeah.
And I went, I gave Michael Sandbrooks a call and told him that I would come up there the next day. And I did. And him and Bram, Bramwell Tripp, they hired me.
Okay.
And I started my my kind of apprenticeship there professionally, smoking meats and learning the operations of a restaurant right there.
Like, what was that like? Because a lot of people who watch these or listen to these probably think, I want to go and work at a barbecue place. Like, what was that first week like for you? Was it overwhelming?
It was tough because it was tough because I was on night shift, and I don't like, there's, night shift was hard, especially in that part of town. You're working by yourself, and it's a lot of work. You know, you do a lot of prep in between the hours that you're not messing with the pits and pulling meats. It was fun. There was a lot of pressure, and it was a huge learning curve. But, man, it was a lot of fun. Yeah, that's basically what I did.
And how long did you work there?
I was there for 11 months.
And then did you move on to Tejas? Is that?
I did, yes.
And how was that? Yeah,
Oh man, that was a lot of fun. By then, I had greatly I don't want to say developed, but I had learned a lot by then and was ready for something new. And my wife and I actually went to Tejas, and we're having chocolates, and you know, we tried the whole menu. And I had messaged Scott a couple weeks before. I was like, hey, you know, I'm interested in, you know, maybe leaving here. And if you're interested in hiring somebody that will run your pit, me and Scott wound up talking, and I interviewed with him, Greg and Michelle, and we hit it off. And I worked there running their pits and starting their sausage program. And, you know, it was a lot of fun.
So was that was after the top 10 came out, right? Or top 50?
Yes, that was after the top 50. I was at the pit room whenever the top 50 list came out.
That must have been interesting too, an interesting time to be there.
It was really interesting. Jimmy Ho coming by, and you know, Texas Monthly there, we're taking pictures, and so it was a lot. And then business just got crazy, because I remember when the pit room opened, we had trouble making the transition from only a lunch service to being open until 9 p.m. at night. Okay. And when you're open that late, there's a whole lot that goes on, you know?
It's a big deal.
It is. And, you know, cooking and pulling the meats all at the same time, making sure that your sides are all as fresh as possible so that the consumer gets the best product they can at the end of the day.
Yeah, and they're expecting a lot. A lot of people come in at 8 expecting a lot.
Yes, exactly. So from going from that and then the top 50 happening at the pit room, you know, we were more prepared for it than we were for at the initial beginning of our own dinner service when we did open. But it was a good thing. And then going from there to Tejas, it was a rush there too, man. I mean, every day is just busy.
Yeah, and the Tejas is like, I think like the pit room I've heard about and a lot of people heard about, but Tejas is someone that a lot of people across the United States have heard about. It's like a go-to sure. place or a wish list, yeah.
Yep.
And their sausage looks spectacular. They're very creative. It's like, I'm sure you've got a lot of information. Like, it's, I'm sure like your background now is really full because of that.
There was a lot of experimentation with their sausage. Scott and I, and even Brandon, we tried a lot of different stuff, and ultimately, a lot of it never made it to the front, you know. Recipes were scrapped, you know, and that happens. But what did make it are Great Links, and they have a gnarly sausage program.
So do you think that'll translate to your restaurant?
Oh, we're working on it. You know, when Mike and I started, once you make the transition from buying a pre-cooked sausage to something that you're going to make from scratch, there's no going back. You can't do both, right? So we knew that going into it, you know, we had to make it right and we had to do it. And man, we've made it wrong plenty, right? You know, you don't become a master of anything without failing before you get there. And you gotta fail a lot. You know, and we made a lot of bad, you know, recipe stuff that, you know, the public didn't have. And on weekends when we thought it was okay, we'd sell it. But But there was a lot of experimentation. You can't transpose your experience from one place directly to another in relation to ingredients, because it doesn't always work out like that.
Yeah, and your kitchen's different. Everything's different.
Yeah. We had a little 5-pound home product grinder, and man, we're running 40 pounds through it in a day, and it would take us 2 hours to grind what should take 30 minutes to grind 25 pounds. So it was a learning curve, but once we got it down and we felt that people were coming to us for our own products, then we invested into a bigger grinder and whatever. Okay. We like to think that we do have a pretty good foot in the door as far as our sausage program.
And that's exciting. And that's like, that's something that that's such a shame here in California. It's like, there's only a few places that are really making their own scratch sausage. It's something that in Texas, and you kind of have to stand out a little bit too. There's a lot of places that just buy like bulk sausage.
It was good talking to you, Kevin.
Yeah. Cause I'm sure all of us could have an hour conversation each.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, what's up, Wade? How you doing?
Doing well, man.
So let's jump into your background. So how long have you been on board with them?
Since March 2nd, I've been at Reveille.
Okay.
And so my background is in 2017, I started up a catering and pop-up barbecue concept called My Yard Reaction Barbecue. Did that for a year and quickly realized that I wanted to open a barbecue restaurant, brick and mortar.
Can you explain to people that might not know what the My Yard Reaction is?
Yeah. So My Yard Reaction is there's Dr. Maillard. He was a French scientist who discovered what makes flavor in food, basically. So it's the browning effect. It's the reaction between the sugars and protein compounds, and when you apply heat to that, they brown food. So whether you're toasting bread or searing a steak or what have you, that's the Maillard reaction, and that's where you're going to get flavor. So when I was doing a lot of research on YouTube and training myself how to cook and barbecue, I learned about the Maillard reaction, and coincidentally, most of the food I was cooking was in my backyard. So it was just an easy pun for me. It was an easy connection for me to make.
That's cool.
So I came up with a concept, my yard, two words, my backyard, basically, my yard reaction barbecue.
I love that so much. I love a good pun. I'm a fool for
Yeah, I'm a sucker for a good pun. So,
but you were doing catering at the time?
Doing catering, doing pop-ups, going to a lot of bars, and just setting up out on the patio and selling our barbecue and burgers and stuff like that.
Was this outside of Houston?
It was in Houston. Yeah, inside the Loop, 610 Loop. We call it the Loop. Yeah. So yeah, it's pretty early on. I realized I wanted to open a restaurant, but I knew I couldn't do that without experience.
Yeah.
So one night we were sitting on the couch watching TV. And Patrick and Aaron Feegis were getting ready to open up Feegis Barbecue, and they put out a post on Facebook that said, we're looking for assistant pit masters and an assistant manager. And my wife said, Wade, you should reach out to Patrick and Aaron and see if you can go to work over there. She goes, I know you want to get into a kitchen and get that experience. So I sent them my resume. They responded, and a couple of months later, I was an assistant pit master at Feegis Barbecue. Worked there for a year.
And they're only open 5 days a week, right?
5 days a week, yeah. Monday through Friday in Greenway Plaza. They're actually in a food court that's underground, 35-story building on top of, like a business complex on top of them. It's a insane setup that they have over there. So yeah, that's really where I learned most of my cooking barbecue for commercial production, if you will. At Feegis,
excluding the top 25 the new 25 that came out, they had a lot of attention too, just like how James had. So how was that, the attention?
No, not really stressful. When I'm doing food, or especially barbecue, I'm in my comfort zone. So it was really just it's really just kind of doing what you trained yourself to do whenever. You know, there was interviews or whenever there was cameras on site, because there was always somebody filming, or Chris Shepherd did a series there.
So
there's a lot of attention there. So you just kind of get in your comfort zone, and you're confident with your product. And so you kind of let that do the talking for you.
Because I've never asked anybody from that. That's an interesting thing to bring up, is that I've never asked anybody what's like to have people filming all the time, like with their phones. Like it's nuts. Like I'll film people without even thinking that I'm like doing it, that I'm really invading their space. But it's like, it's public, it's a restaurant, but still I guess you said like you're in your comfort zone, so you don't think about it?
You really don't think about it. Yeah. For me, I don't. I don't know how other people deal with it, but for me, if I always tell myself, if I'm around food or if I'm dealing with food, if I have a knife in my hand, I'm slicing brisket, then I can talk to anybody. Yeah. So I'm sure, you know, everybody has their little safe zones.
And it's a public thing. Like when you're cutting brisket for people, you're doing it. It's like a presentation almost, like you're.
Absolutely. It's a huge, that's a lot of barbecue is customer service and presentation and talking to the guest. And, you know, I can't tell you how many times people just walk right into the pit room at Reveille and just start talking barbecue and you know, want to know about the barbecue pit, want to know what kind of wood we're using, what type of season. It's just it's such a conversation starter that it's really just easy to let down your guard around barbecue and that's
so unique too. Like you wouldn't do that like at an Italian restaurant, like just go walk in the back and start like looking at their pots and say like, well, what's going
exactly right.
So then how did you make it? How did you go from Fijis to where you are now?
So when I went into Fijis, I went in with the intentions of being here for a year and learning the systems and going out and doing my own thing after that. And so there were several different opportunities arising around town, right around my 1 year mark. And so I was basically seeking investors and just looking for what would fit best for me to get in my own brick and mortar. And things weren't really panning out. There was no really clear path. Something would come up and it would look like it was going to be the deal, and then it would change direction. So I'm sure that anybody that's opened up a barbecue restaurant or any restaurant for that matter would understand that.
Yeah, for sure.
You're going to go down many different paths before you find the right one. One of the whole hog events we did at Reveille Barbecue, we've done a few of them. James and Michael said, "Hey, Wade, we have an idea. We know that you're looking for your own spot. We have an opportunity for you. What would you say to be a part owner and full-time pitmaster at Reveille?" And so, you know, it was a perfect setup. You know, I didn't tell them that right away because I wanted to make them sweat a little bit.
Of course. But, you got to do that, right?
Because I grew up in Magnolia. That was a town that I was from. Went to elementary school there, went to junior high there, went to high school there, and we have a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old daughter, and our main goal was to get them back in Magnolia and get them going to the same schools that we went to, my wife and I went to. So it was a perfect setup, and it, really the stars just aligned for us to get back on that side of town.
And Magnolia is northwest of Houston? Is that
northwest of Houston, okay. Yeah.
Is it kind of near Tomball?
Very near, yeah. They're right next to each other. That's neighboring.
Okay.
Neighboring cities. Yeah.
So then it must be a great place to live too. Like if it's somewhere you wanted to move back to, because I was gonna have one of you guys describe Magnolia. So maybe you might as well.
It's just a small town. There's, you know, of course anybody that goes back to their hometown, there's that nostalgia and that familiarity with your surroundings. But no, it's a small town. Back when I was going to high school there, I think it was one of the fastest growing towns in the nation. The population when I was a young child there was, you know, less than 15,000, and now it's over 130,000.
That's huge growth.
It's huge. Yeah, it's huge. It's boomed. Okay. It's a great town for barbecue, too, to open a barbecue restaurant. It's small enough where you can get the community behind you, but it's also big enough to where the sky is really the limit out there.
Is there any other barbecue in Magnolia?
Yes, there is a Barbecue Hut, which is a small family-owned business. It's been in Magnolia since I was a kid, and they just do, you know, your chopped beef sandwiches and rib platters and stuffed potatoes and stuff like that.
It's exciting too to be like, because then you could be like the flagship restaurant for a town, like it's or for it's. I think people the community seems to get behind those things.
As far as craft barbecue and that side of town, there's us and Tejas, and then a little bit further. East, I guess you would say it would be Corkscrew, but
yeah, Corkscrew's Woodlands, right? Is that
Woodlands, oh, spring, yeah. More spring than the Woodlands, yeah.
So let's talk about your Houston Astros story.
So the Houston Astros, like we were talking about earlier about the Houston Astros kind of themed shirts.
Yeah,
I kind of came up with that idea because on the back, let's put on the top where the regular name would be, let's put Reveille. Underneath that, let's put the year we were created, 18, and then underneath that, just like maybe established. Whatnot, and then James found the logo on the front that kind of went along. We thought would fit perfectly with the color of shirts and whatnot. My experience with the Astros. So 2017, I'm a huge Astros fan. I grew up going to the Astros, going to the Astrodome, everything like that. So in 2017, when the Astros went to the World Series, I went to not all the playoff games, but I went to at least one playoff game from each of the different Series.
Okay, well, that's awesome to begin with.
Yeah, when it came to the World Series, actually was able to purchase a standing room ticket only.
Okay.
I purchased two of them. I purchased two tickets to game. Let me think. Hold on. Game two, one and two were in L.A. Three, four, and five were in Houston. I purchased tickets to game three and game four. Game three is one that happened in Houston. Game four happened, and I brought my dad. I had two tickets to that. Game three was on my mom's birthday, so I had to sell those tickets so I could attend my mom's birthday. Game four, I took my dad to the World Series, and we actually found great seats right behind third baseline, right behind the concession stand. There was an ice chest. We ended up start talking to the people, and they're like, "Oh yeah, just sit there if y'all need anything, whatever. Just turn around and yell at us." We would turn around. There's like a line of people, 100 people deep behind us. We'd just turn around, like, "Hey, can I get this?" "Oh yeah, definitely. Here, let me get that for you." Just got taken care of. I mean, we thought that was the best thing ever.
That sounds awesome.
When Game Six happened on that morning, Mattress Mac. He's y'all know who Mattress Mac is, but he's well, almost like a celebrity down here in Houston, Texas area. He's well-known guy. Has a furniture company. He does all sorts of different giveaways, different things for the community.
Did he do stuff during the hurricane?
Yes, sir, he did.
Okay, that's why I know him. Okay.
He gave a bunch of mattresses, new mattresses to, I know any first responder that had a mattress that was destroyed or anything needed a new mattress, he gave a new mattress to. Citizens who needed a new mattress, he bought, thousands of new mattresses and gave them away.
I remember that.
During the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, he's always the purchaser of the Grand Champion steer, which usually goes for over $1 million. This man gives back to the community like nobody else.
Okay.
So game six of the World Series, when it was happening, the morning of, he was going to give away tickets that day. If you show up there around 5:30 in the morning, he was going to start giving away two pair of tickets every hour on that.
Okay.
Wait. Well, I was one of the few people that day that was fortunate enough to get a ticket.
Okay.
So we left. We left Gallery Furniture, go to the airport, had to be at the airport within like an hour. So I drove directly from there to the airport, got to the airport, parked my truck, took a charter plane, which was a 747, for all the people. He paid for all this.
Oh my gosh.
Everybody who won into LA.
What?
Took a bus from LA, from the airport to the stadium, two charter buses to the stadium. Attended the game on a down first baseline, is about five rows up.
Oh my gosh.
Perfect seats. Unfortunately, Astros lost that game, but they brought it back home and won game seven. Yeah. Left there, we left the stadium, came back. On the way back to the airport, we stopped at In-N-Out, which, by the way, is not better than Whataburger. Got back to the airport, flew back, got back in that morning. I actually got somebody to ride for me the next day because I was supposed to work the next day. So we got back in Houston. It's about 5:30 a.m., 6 a.m.
Oh, my gosh.
Enough time to go home, kind of clean up, change, take a little nap, and then watch Astros win game seven.
That is so amazing.
So the next day, so the Astros win the very next day. It's my middle day. I'm supposed to be working the next day. Okay. Next day after that, I get a phone call from my senior captain. Senior captain goes, "Hey, I know you're a big Astros actually, you start off, "Hey, I know you were off the other day. Are you going to be here tomorrow? I go, "Yes, sir, I am." He goes, "I need to know for sure. Are you going to be here?" I go, "Yes, sir, I'll be here tomorrow. Yeah, Tower 69 is going to be involved in the parade, and I want you to be part of that. I want you to be on the tower with me." I go, "Yes, sir, I'll definitely be there."
Oh, that's...
So that night, went in, cleaned up the tower as much as I could, polished the rims, cleaned it up, made that thing look brand new, shine like a diamond. Got there the next day, sure enough, Class B uniform, dressed up, went taken down there to get outfitted. We're the first one to get down there, get outfitted. They start setting up, putting wood on there. I'm looking at them like, "Why are y'all building this rack on the front of the tower?" They're like, "Oh, that's where the World Series trophy is going to be." Like, wait a second. The World Series trophy is going to be on our tower. They're like, "Yeah, awesome." So we didn't know that we were going to be the lead truck in the parade until that time.
Oh, that's so cool. That is so crazy.
So we go, set up. First thing happens, like everybody starts showing up to get on the truck. Springer shows up holding the World Series trophy. Yeah!
That's cool.
And he can't carry it up a ladder, so what happens? He hands it off to the fire chief. Fire chief hands it off to me. I'm holding it up there on the top of the ladder truck.
Oh,
wait, no.
That is too cool.
And so, I mean, we drove all the way down Houston, came back. There was, they said probably a million, but I guarantee there's probably 2.5-3 million people down there. You would look down one side street, and side street would be packed up with people for miles and miles down the road.
What an experience. Like, how you would never get a chance to experience that.
That's it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience. I mean, for an Astros fan, it was the greatest experience ever. To be up there with the players, Astros, Keuchel, Bregman, all them that were up there, it was an amazing experience. And then when we came back around, everybody was getting off the ladder truck, and Correa had the World Series trophy at that time, and he walks up to me and goes, hey, can you do me a favor? I go, yeah. He goes, can you hold this? I was like, yes, definitely I can hold this. But can I take a selfie with you? He goes, yeah. So I got a death grip on the World Series trophy, try to pull out my phone. I get my phone out, get it to the selfie thing, and take a selfie with him holding the World Series trophy.
Oh, that is so – and is it heavy?
In the heat of the moment, I thought the thing felt like a paperweight. It just felt so light. I had a death grip on it. I was going to let that thing
– of course, you're not going to drop that. Like,
adrenaline was pumping. It felt light as could be.
But do you think, like, in retrospect, it's pretty heavy, right?
I looked it up. If I remember right, it weighs a little over 30 pounds.
Oh, so that's decent. Like a 30-pound kid in your arm would be heavy.
Yeah.
That
was my experience with the Astros.
That's really cool. That's awesome. Okay, well then, you're knee-deep in Astros history now. Like, you're part of the...
And also, it was neat watching them play the Dodgers, by the way.
Yeah, that was tough. But it was... Because I grew up as a Dodger fan, but I also respect the Houston... Yeah.
I've got respect for the Dodgers. I'll make a long story short. 1983, my cousin was involved in a major accident. And he was guaranteed to go pro either football or baseball.
Okay.
The driver of the car was killed. He was in a coma for like several months, about 6 months.
Oh, my gosh.
Coming out of the coma, Tommy Lasorda actually, when he was in high school, watched him play baseball. So when he was in the coma, coming out of the coma, Tommy Lasorda actually visited him in the hospital.
Wow.
And made a deal with him, said, next time we're in town, if you're able to walk into the dressing room, I'll put you in a full Dodgers uniform and sit you on the bench.
Oh.
So sure enough, my cousin worked as hard as he could. He was able to walk again. Tom Lasorda came to town, and sure enough, my cousin walked down there, and Tom Lasorda mantled his word, put him in the full Dodgers uniform, and set him on the bench for the game.
Oh, bless his heart. That's amazing. Yeah. Tommy's a great guy, and and that just shows it goes deeper than rivalries or anything. It's just about love and people, and wow, that's a great story. That's an interesting Tommy story. I might even use that as a separate Tommy story later on, too, because it's so cool. It's like, that's awesome. And in the end, like, I respect the Astros, because that was a tough series. That was, like, so many home runs, and my heart, like, that was up and down. Wasn't that the series that was really up and down? Like, you never knew who was going to win any game?
To me, Game 5 was one of the most – almost bought tickets to Game 5, and I didn't. I regret it. But to me, I think Game 5 was one of the most suspenseful games in baseball history.
Hard to watch. It hurt my heart.
Over time, the time it was played, the back and forth – you had a combination of pitcher's battle, hitting battle. I mean, a little bit of everything in that match.
Yeah. Was that the one that went like way into the night? Is that the
yes?
So where'd you grow up?
I grew up out actually kind of the same area, Magnolia area, Tomball area,
okay.
Where Reveille's currently at, approximately about 3 miles north of there.
Okay.
So that's one of the reasons we chose that area. I have history of that area. Me and James were kind of going back and forth when he used to work in the pit room about where to possibly open a place. And I live in the Heights, which is 45 minutes, 50 minutes away from Magnolia.
Okay.
And one of the places we threw out there one time was next to my house. Let's start a barbecue place up right next to my house. I've got an empty lot out there. Let's do it. It's packed here. Like, no, let's not. So when Thanksgiving of 2017, the piece of property came available. There used to be a furniture company there, and I found out on Thanksgiving that furniture company was closing down, or not closing down, but they were going to move further up the road, and that piece of property was going to be available because of the construction. The construction there was just killing them.
Okay.
So when I found out that, I contacted James. I was like, hey, James, you still interested in doing your own thing, a barbecue restaurant? And he goes, yeah, I'm definitely interested. I go, hey, I've got a place up here I think a perfect location. It's a booming area. Magnolia's fastly growing, probably one of the fastest growing places in the nation.
Yeah.
And I took him up there. I showed him the piece of property. He goes, man, yeah, this is a great location. It's sitting on 2 acres. You got a lot of green space, plenty of parking, 2,000 square foot patio, plenty of outside space. So.
Perfect. Were you thinking about barbecue when you were in the Marines? Was that something that you thought about?
When I was in the Marine Corps, I like grilling. I like doing cooking steaks, stuff on the grill.
Yeah.
So even when I was over in Iraq, one of the things we did was we made a makeshift barbecue grill. We took a cinder blocks and a grill, put it on top of that. And what type of meat it was, I don't know if it was camel or if it was type of beef. The guy we bought it from, he said it was beef. We took his word for it. And grilled out there. The whole entire, got out of the Marine Corps. Still did grilling, like grill my own steaks. Still one of my favorite things to do today. Joined the Houston Fire Department. When I got in the Houston Fire Department, I was at Station 10 in Southwest Houston over off Beller and the Beltway. It's one of the most busiest places in Houston area. And one of the guys here on the rescue truck started cooking a brisket one day. And this is the way I got into barbecue.
Okay.
I started watching him cook a brisket, and I was like, man, that's interesting. What are you doing? I was kind of watching him. I was like, man, that's fascinating. Kind of learned a little bit that day. He showed me how to cook a brisket, or I'm sorry, how to cut a brisket the old-fashioned way, where you slice the deckle off the flat and kind of scrape some of that fat off, and then you slice it.
Yeah.
So I was like, I was like, I think I could do this. So I tried it maybe a couple of months later. I tried it, and then later on down the road, me and James became friends, and we started hanging out, and he started having bits at his house, and we started cooking pulled pork and briskets, and I was still doing briskets and stuff like that at the fire station. And improving our game. And then me and him started doing competition here and there, competing different locations, doing steak night at bars.
Okay, steaks. So that's how you guys got connected that way.
Yes.
Okay. And then were you, when you're doing competition, was it like a standard competition with like the dark meat chicken, pulled pork, brisket?
Yes, sir. Kind of like a three-category brisket, pretty much your basic cook-off competitions. A lot of them were smaller, not like huge ones like the Houston Barbecue competition or Houston Lifestyle Show Rodeo competition, just small competitions.
But they have those all around Texas, like small-town barbecue events. Competitions. I remember seeing them when I was there. It's like, yeah, there's ones with like 20, 30 people, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
That would be anywhere 20, 30 people to a couple hundred people.
And then that got your bug, but then deep back, like, were you and James thinking, hey, we might open a restaurant or do like a trailer someday?
Yes, sir. That was later on down the road. We were doing that, I would say, 10 years ago, James?
Oh, really? That long ago?
8 years ago.
I didn't realize it was that long ago. Okay.
Kickoff competitions 8 years ago.
Okay.
And then, like he was talking about his background, he got into the pit room. And when he got in the pit, I never thought about opening a barbecue restaurant until he got in the pit room. And when he got in the pit room, I was like, man, you know what? That'd be actually a good idea. And I did kind of a few catering jobs. I did some birthdays, little small events, maybe 40, 60 people. And that's when people start trying our barbecue and like, hey, y'all got some fantastic stuff. That's when it kind of started going through our mind, maybe open up something of our own.
And when you opened it, what was the reaction in the first couple of weeks when you opened your own?
Everybody was excited about it. Everybody that came up, first couple of weeks we opened, we did a couple of little soft openings. We invited people who would give their honest feedback about the barbecue. And one thing that it took was growing into a pit we've never used. We were turning out a great, good product on there. Everybody was enjoying it. And the people who were giving honest feedback were giving honest feedback like, hey, I would suggest doing this. It was a little bit over salty, just minor things that we just had to tweak.
Yeah.
And when we first opened up with everybody, surprisingly for a place that just first opened up, everybody that was trying it truly enjoyed it.
And was it you first opened up in Magnolia, right? I didn't know if you started somewhere else and then opened that. Okay.
No, so the only experience out of there, or like only thing me and James did outside of that was just little competitions. When we decided to open up a place, we just went straight 100% into it. We didn't try to do any pop-ups. We went straight, opened a place up at 37421 FM 1774, Magnolia, Texas.
I'll definitely put a link to the map, and that's to wrap it up too. What's the barbecue? Because you weren't necessarily part of the barbecue world 10 years ago, but what's it like now with the people and the camaraderie?
I'll tell you two different points of view. I'll tell you the best way I'm gonna say is the civilian world, because the military, that's the only way I can describe it. So from the civilian side, the outside of the barbecue world, I believe the Texas barbecue scene has just been blowing up insanely. I didn't realize what type of family there was in the barbecue until I got into it. But from the outside, I would say probably the past 6 years, the level of barbecue has just been getting better and better. I was actually talking to one of the guys who was in the top 25 4 years ago between the top 50. And he said when the top 25 came out 4 years ago, he didn't see much change in his business. He didn't see, there wasn't nearly as much publicity it got. When this one came out this year, there's been a lot more publicity. There's been like Channel 2 picked up on Houston Chronicle. I mean, there's probably been 10 different bloggers easily that popped it up and like throwing it out there. Hey, here's the top 25. Hey, y'all need to go out there and try it. There's been a lot more publicity on it. So a civilian side of it, it's been blowing up that way. So now, from getting into the barbecue scene, I had no idea what to expect inside the barbecue scene. I'll say this for the barbecue scene. In the Marine Corps, everybody talks about the camaraderie, how it's a family.
Yeah.
Fire department, the same thing.
Yeah.
The barbecue world is truly a family in there. One of my first experiences truly seeing what the family is like in the barbecue industry was right before we opened up, me, James, a handful of other people, Brett from Brett's Backyard Barbecue, Mike Rufino, a couple other people, went to Snow's Barbecue. We met up there. It's probably about 20 of us total. And, I mean, we got taken care of. And that's when I realized what the family was like in the barbecue industry. And I sat back for a second. I even watched them. I was like, holy cow. How is it all these different barbecue restaurants are hanging out together?
It's not amazing. Talking,
oh, man, my barbecue is better than you, or anything like that. It's like, oh, hey, yeah, dude, I need to get out to your place this week. Or
it's the most supportive. It's the weirdest support. Like, it's amazingly supportive. It's like so great. I love it. I just love it.
The support is unbelievable. One thing I was worried about was like when James was working at Tejas, how is that going to transaction? He'll move in about 10 miles down the road, starting up his own place. But Tejas has been great supporters of ours. Likewise, we're still great supporters of Tejas. We send people to Tejas, and I've heard a couple of people come out there and it's like, oh, yeah, Tejas said they've already sold out for the day. Hey, why don't you come out here to Reveille and give them a try?
Oh, that's great. See, that's awesome.
They said, hey, we're closed. Unfortunately, we're closed on Sunday, so why don't you go out there to Reveille and give them a try? And same thing, hey, we're not open on Monday or Tuesday, Wednesdays, when Tejas is open, why don't you go out there and give them a try? So you would think it would be butting heads, but it's not.
Yeah, and there really isn't a reason to, because you guys are different, and you also, it's like Tejas is really busy, so it's like...
That's what I try to explain to my parents who sit there and watch Reveille, what's happening with them.
Yeah.
There's millions of people. There's multi-millions of people inside a Houston area. If you want barbecue, you're going to find a barbecue place to go to.
Yes.
You're going to have your favorite barbecue restaurant you go to. Whether you go out here and try this place, mm-hmm. you're going to try that barbecue. You're going to make an opinion for yourself, whether you like it or not, and then go to the next place and try that. You're always, in Texas, you're always going to try different new places and find the best.
Yeah, and then for you, you'll be a local joint in Magnolia too, for people that want to come to it, but also the people that live in the area. That's really great. And thank you guys, all three of you guys, for taking the time for this, because it's been. I think people will learn a lot from this.
Oh, definitely. Thank you for inviting us onto your podcast.
Whatever it is, like it's a podcast on YouTube. I don't even know what to call it. Really, I can't wait to meet you guys in person too.
Yeah, likewise. I've been following you. You've had some amazing barbecue people on your show. And to invite us out here as well, we feel honored for it.
Well, thank you. I'm honored as well. I'm so glad you guys took the time, and have a good evening, and good luck with the rest of your week.
You too. Thank you.